You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The government's Employment Relations Amendment Bill has passed its third and final reading. The bill has been spearheaded by Employment Relations Minister Brooke Van Velden. Two key parts of the bill are a new test to decide whether workers are considered employees or contractors, and an income threshold of $200,000 above which workers can no longer bring personal grievances for unjustified dismissal. The bill has been highly controversial, with Labour leader Chris Hipkins saying the law change would drive workers to Australia and that Van Velden doesn't understand the dynamic that exists between an employer and an employee. Green MP Tiano Tuiono also called it a terrible bill and a dark day for workers in Aotearoa. I spoke to Etu National Secretary Rachel McIntosh about what the bill means for workers, particularly the new test to define who is a contractor. I started by asking if she could go through her key concerns for the bill.
It is a real attack on the ability for working people to get decent work is kind of the big picture, and it does this in multiple ways. What the Minister says is that it is rebalancing things, give employers more power. In fact, it gives employers who already have more power than the people they employ much, much more power. It allows employers to label workers as contractors without regard to the real nature of what's going on in the relationship. And the effect of that on a working person is that they have to pay their own taxes, they have no right to sick leave or annual leave, they basically have no employment rights because suddenly 150 years of fighting to give people basic rights so that they have some security in their jobs is just wiped away. That's the really big one. It also makes it much harder for a worker if an employer sacks them unjustifiably or in fact does something else to disadvantage them unjustifiably. The law has changed so that it is much easier for employers to do that, so that if you challenge it, even if you win, you're very unlikely to get your job back. You won't get your job back. And also, if you've contributed in any way, that's the legal word is contribution. Like if the reason they sacked you is because you were doing something they didn't like, then that counts as contribution. Then you get no compensation, which just makes it way more likely that employers will sack people without worrying about whether they're doing it right or not.
What is your response to Brooke Van Velden's specific comment that this bill is about increasing confidence for businesses, especially when taking a risk on a new hire?
What we know from experience is that if you do this and you make that kind of statement, it makes no difference to how many people get jobs. It's the same thing that people with Brooke Van Velden's worldview say about increasing wages. They say if you have really low wages, people are more likely to get jobs. If you have really low job security, people are more likely to get jobs. Well, there's two things. One, evidence shows that that doesn't work. People are not more likely to get jobs. And two, that just lowers the quality of the work that people will get because it won't be adequately paid. They won't have adequate security.
And I want to ask, is this legislation essentially a response to the Supreme Court rejecting Uber's appeal against treating drivers like employees?
The part about contractors lines up exactly with what Uber wanted and with what Uber was arguing in court that they wanted the answer to be. They didn't get that answer in court, and now this legislation basically gives Uber everything that they wanted.
So is this about the government caving to the demands of this kind of big multinational?
Well, certainly that's what it looks like. Brooke Van Velden denies it. I do like to believe people when they say things, but sometimes it's really hard to believe it because the coincidence of this law and what Uber wanted is just so remarkable.
And do you agree with the opposition's criticisms of the bill, particularly what we've heard from Labor and the Greens?
Yes, absolutely. So Labor and the Greens both see the value of work and they see the value of working people having decent work including the ability to organise collectively and join a union.
Is there anything else you would want people to know about this bill?
This takes us back decades, if not centuries, to a time when work was really precarious, where employers held all the power and workers just had to basically compete with each other for scraps and, as contractors, charge the lowest amount possible for their labour. And we need wages to grow. So it does the opposite of what is needed by people in this country.
I also spoke to University of Auckland Law School Professional Teaching Fellow Simon Schofield about the bill, particularly the impact on those earning more than $200,000 and workers more generally. I started by asking if he could explain the new employment rules for people earning more than $200,000.
So the Employment Relations Amendment bill that is soon to be an act means that people over $200,000 earning more than $200,000 per year are unable to pursue a personal grievance for unjustified dismissals. Now, there is a time lag involved in those rules, which mean that for the next 12 months that the parties can negotiate to contract back into the personal grievance provision.
What is the alternative process proposed in the bill, and why don't you think it will work as well?
The way in which the bill is set up is to create this situation where you have at-will termination for those earning over $200,000. The problem is that until the economic disadvantage of being terminated is taken away, i.e. There's some sort of requirement for unemployment insurance or income protection insurance, it means that those senior level employees will inevitably, once they're terminated, will be unable to pay the bills, right? And so by having the current system where everything is determined whether there's a unjustified dismissal, and in particular where a fair and reasonable process has been undertaken and there's a good reason for the termination, that serves as a mitigating factor to prevent those employees having issues with that termination. So the suggestion, the way in which the bill is set up, is that those employees can be terminated at a moment's notice, and obviously that creates will create conflict.
How does this compare to other countries we generally compare ourselves to on employment law, places like Australia, for example?
Yeah, so it's interesting you mention Australia. So Australia has had an income threshold for personal grievances for a number of years under the Fair Work Act. The differences between the New Zealand system and the Australian system is that, for instance, collective agreements, enterprise agreements they call them over in Australia, they mean that certain categories of workers are exempt from that income threshold. So when we talk about pilots and we talk about doctors, in Australia they're automatically entitled to the unjustified dismissal protection, but in New Zealand they won't be. That creates, they may or may not be, depending on what the negotiations that take place in the 12-month period. So there are a number of advantages in the Australian system which haven't been reflected in the bill.
The bill introduces a number of new changes. Is there anything else you think is worth highlighting?
Well, there's two... The two big changes are the specified contractor exemption. So basically those working in the gig economy and couriers will no longer be able to allege that they're an employee because of the specific exemption that's provided. They're provided, of course, that they fall within the wording of the specified contractor exemption. In relation to dismissals where an employee has contributed to the dismissal, then there are various changes which mean that those employees aren't entitled to remedies. In particular, remedies of reinstatement and compensation for humiliation, loss of dignity and injury to feelings. Just related to that is that previously an employee who contributed to dismissal, the general rule was that that could be up to 50%, the remedies could be reduced. Another change is implemented in the bill is that that is now at 100%, so employees' remedies can be reduced entirely. In addition to that, the obstruction that an employee imposes on an employer during a disciplinary process or employment process will be taken into account in assessing the justification for the dismissal.
And is there anything else you think people should know about this piece of legislation, especially the kind of impact it could have moving forward?
Yeah, the answer to that is there is going to be an impact, but we're not entirely sure on all of the permutations in relation to that. So we know, for instance, that certainly in the high income space, that inherently is going to create a high turnover of staff, which means that that can have a flow-on effect to those middle managers that are trying to deal with the situation. So it can create a lot of uncertainty in workplaces. But in terms of the specified contractor exemption, we'll probably see a lot more young people being treated as specified contractors and not subject to employment protections. In terms of the contribution issue, we may see employers increasingly take a more aggressive approach to dismissals where serious misconduct is alleged, with the result that they may find themselves in problems later down the track, i.e. both the employer and the employee will have difficult questions arising in relation to that serious misconduct.
That was ETU National Secretary Rachel McIntosh and University of Auckland Teaching Fellow Simon Schofield on the impact of the government's Employment Relations Amendment Bill.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.